All right, this is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, June 13th, 2022, business session. And I'd like to call this meeting to order. It is 6:02 p.m. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Here.
Director Booth.
Here.
Director Frumfeller.
Here.
Director Karcher.
Here.
Director Olson.
Here.
All right, if you'd stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Can I get a motion for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
So moved.
All right. We got it. So moved in a second. Okay.
Roll.
We're good. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Yes.
Director Olson.
Yes.
All right. Can I get a motion to move into executive session under CRS 24-6-402-4D, Specialized Details of Security Arrangements and Investigations?
So moved.
So moved. Or go ahead.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Karcher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right, we are now moving into executive session under CRS 24-6-402-4D, Specialized Details of Security Arrangements or Investigations, and the time is 6:04 p.m. Okay, I think we're ready to get started. The time is 7:50, and we are now back in open session. And so we're going to go through the a few logistics here. Approval of minutes. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the BOE meeting on May 23rd?
Second.
Okay. Did you get that?
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the BOE special meeting on May 24th, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. And one more time. Can I get the motion to approve the minutes from BOE special meeting on June 8th? 2022.
So moved.
So moved. Sorry.
Second.
Second. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. Moving on to communications, we've got our HR update. Ken?
This is being my last HR update until we get back together in the school year. So I wanted to really primarily just kind of update you on where we are with hiring for the next school year. Currently, we've filled 70% of our vacant teaching positions. It's moving along pretty well. We've got several more to fill, but I'm reasonably confident that we'll have most, if not all, of them filled by the beginning of the school year. There are times when we don't have every single one of them filled at the beginning of the school year, but hopefully that'll be none or maybe one. But we'll see. We'll see. Some interesting things about filling these positions this year. It's really interesting. In a normal year, we'll either have, and I'm talking about hiring of teachers, we'll either have a zero or maybe one on a good year new teacher that lives in Elizabeth. We just don't have that much to draw from here with our population. As of right now, of those 70% that we filled, 11 of those teachers currently live in Elizabeth. Not even. I mean, it is crazy, and it's great. that we've got people in the community that are coming in. A number of them have moved into the new developments out here in Elizabeth. So that's a number of them. We have two parents that have been interested in teaching for a while and have gotten their licenses. We've hired two parents from the community. So there's real community people coming into the district to teach our students, which is really neat.
That's great.
We have three teachers that formerly worked for the district, left, and are coming back for next school year, which is really great. We have two student teachers that student taught at our elementary schools, and they are getting their first teaching jobs with us this year. So a lot of homegrown talent this year, which is really exciting. And probably the best homegrown story is we hired a first-year teacher. I think she's 22 years old, right out of college, and she's going to be teaching science at the high school, and she is a EHS, Elizabeth High School graduate. She graduated four to five years ago. Do you know her?
I do. Yes,
Redler?
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very nice, very personable. Her mentor at the school, at the high school when she was going through high school, was Robin Poirier, who's one of our science teachers there. Robin was on the committee interviewing candidates, and Bottom was one of the candidates. So very young, very personable, very smart, and lives here in Elizabeth and graduated from Elizabeth High School. So we have these really neat homegrown people that are coming into our district, much more than usual. I mean, like I said, if we have one a year, that's something. And we've got 11 so far.
That's amazing.
So
that's
really great. Happy about that. So that's all good news. I do have some concerns about our special services providers. They report to our special education director, Tammy Kruger. We've lost a number of specialists this summer. We've lost two speech-language pathologists, two social workers, our behavioral specialist, and one occupational therapist. Those are hard to fill. Those are very difficult to fill. We have filled two of those positions. We've hired one speech-language pathologist, and we've hired a occupational therapist for the person that's not going to be here anymore. But we still have several positions. They're hard to fill. They're hard to find. It's very hard for not just us, but other school districts to compete with the private sector out there with hospitals and other organizations that pay really well, really well. So that's my big concern, but I know Tammy's working very hard on it. I'm getting all over the place with advertisements, recruitments, and so forth. So, but that's one that I'm keeping a close eye on, and I'm concerned about it. So I'll let you know how that all turns out when I see you again in August. Okay. And then the last thing I wanted to update you on is, you know that we're switching to Kaiser next school year for our employees. And I wanted to let you know the conversion to Kaiser is going extremely well. All of the enrollments from our employees for next year, they've selected their plans. That information is all in Kaiser. It's all been processed. They know what plans they want, and Kaiser is processing those. They're sending their Kaiser cards out over the next 2 weeks, so people will have that well before they start school in the new year. And they're also calling new members, particularly members in our plan that gives you all kinds of different options and choices, to kind of talk to those people that have signed up for those plans, see if they have any questions. Because that plan can be a little bit complex, but just in general, they're asking people if they have questions. So they're reaching out to all of our members right now, seeing if they have any issues with prescriptions, anything that Kaiser needs to know about before we start in the next school year with them. So that's going very, very smoothly, and we're working very, very well with them and vice versa. So that's what's going on as we enter the summer. And just a reminder that I will be required to be off in July by para, but I will be back August 1st. That's our first day of orientation of our new licensed employees, so I'm looking forward to getting back at that point. So,
awesome.
Any questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Ken. Right. Appreciate it, yeah. All right, Marty.
Good evening. I only have a couple updates for you guys today, and that's to give you a heads up for things that are coming to you guys in the next board meeting. One is around this time is when we usually do a big purchase of our Chromebooks for our one-to-one program. And so my RFP just closed last Friday. I'm evaluating those bids right now. And so once I make a decision in the next board meeting, you'll see that come towards you guys. Generally speaking, that's a really big purchase. In the years past, it's been over 100,000. Generally speaking, we buy anywhere from 400 to 500 Chromebooks, or we have at least over the past three summers. And so I'll evaluate the bids, take a look at them, and I'll get those to you for next board meeting. The other one is to give you also a heads up that there will be a disposition of assets going to you. And I thought I'd take this opportunity to explain to our new board members in terms of our disposition of assets for technology and what we do with them. So generally speaking, these are really, really old technology. I know there's always been a question about, find a vendor to do a buyback program, or maybe we can do some sort of program where we can offer it to the community and have them donate, etc. Generally speaking, our computers are super old. We run them to the ground. They're sometimes in the neighborhood of 8, 9 years old, 10 years old. And so there's really no value in them. Also, a lot of our Chromebooks that we put towards a disposition of assets, we cannibalize them for parts to repair. So a lot of the screens are interchangeable, for example. So we'll take the old Chromebooks, remove some screens. Out of them, that's our number one repair item every year is repairing screens. And so we'll save them, and then you've got a shell of a Chromebook, essentially, that nobody would want to buy that. So that, I just wanted to give you a heads up that that's what's coming also in a couple of weeks, that you'll see a disposition of assets, and those are really, really obsolete equipment that's on those lists. Besides that, nothing else to report on. You have any questions for me?
Supply chain issues with the Chromebooks, do you see, foresee?
Not right now. Okay. I think, knock on wood, one of my requirements in the RFP is to let me know if anything is going to be impacted in terms of delivery, like it was the past couple of years. For some of you didn't remember, I think last summer, we didn't get those 400 Chromebooks until a couple of weeks before school started. And so, obviously, that makes it a little bit more challenging for us as a staff to get 400 Chromebooks ready in a short amount of time. This summer, there seems to be plenty of inventory. A lot of it is because I tend to go with the ones that are more affordable, and so they tend to be the ones that are on the lower end of in terms of the specs, et cetera, and pricing, and therefore tend to be more available because we're trying to get it in stock. Having said that, I don't want you to worry about having these machines being obsolete so quickly. One of the other things I look for is support for these products. I make sure that Google supports them for at least 5 years from the purchase, and all of the quotes that I saw that came in all have a 5-year or more lifespan in terms of support. Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Marty. Thank you, Marty. All right. Ron, floor is yours.
All right. Checks over $5,000. Most of the checks are for items that we have talked about in the past, utilities, fuel, things like that. The following are some that have not been, that are on the list that are not, that do not fall in that category. We got payments for contractual services for special needs students, safety-related purchases, flow through payment to another district for a grant, the EHS HVAC units that will be going on to the school probably in the next week, a school marquee that was funded with PTCO dollars and donations, tech hardware, and out-of-district placement for students. Any questions regarding checks over $5,000?
So the Running Creek, the sign, the same thing that we did at Single Hills. Run it through the
PDCL. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Okay, cool.
All right, finance statements. As of the end of April, we are a little bit over 83% through the fiscal year. We've collected nearly 65% of our budgeted general fund revenues and have expended little over 75% of the budgeted general funds expenditures. There are three cost centers over the benchmark, but nothing that will affect the overall general fund budget or be a cause for concern. Of the other funds, the only funds that we are keeping a close eye on is the food service and people activity fund. Any questions there? I got two more items, one budget related and one MOU related. Okay. Really quickly, the food service memorandum of understanding is on your agenda tonight. And so I just want to let you know that we met with Legacy, and both Legacy and the district agreed that it was in the best in both of our best interests to continue with the relationship to provide food service for the upcoming year, and that's why you have the MOU here before you. Next one is a quick budget update. Budget assumptions and changes. There were a few changes on our budget assumptions, and when I say few, there's very, very minor. They're larger dollar amounts, but there's just a couple of changes. One is the anticipated beginning fund balance has increased for a couple of reasons. One is previously we had I had built in there that we would have spent the money for $450,000 for the school buses. That's not going to happen until the next fiscal year, and so it's back on this year's capital needs budget. And we also got an extra couple of $100,000 from the high-cost app for sped services. So that increased what we anticipate to be the beginning fund balance for next school year. And also the only other change was in the capital needs. The capital needs we've increased partially due to putting the buses back on that list. Plus, there were two items added. One is spring floor for EHS gymnastics, and then what was the other one? Oh yeah, there was Running Creek Early Childhood Program got a grant for some both salary and benefits needs and also playground needs. And so I added that to the list. It's a $70,000 new structure for their playground. And so that was added to the list. So those are the two changes with capital projects. Let's see. So the anticipated ending fund balance for next year has increased to $2.7 million. Any questions so far there? Right. Big unknown for next year is exactly how many students are going to show up for the new developments. Don't really have any idea. They have trickled in over the last few months, over the last year and that. Don't know how many. I mean, the homes are going up fast and furious out there, so don't know what kind of the impact that's going to be for us for the next school year. And then finally, I want to talk about kind of just really kind of big overall picture of we're all seeing, the hyperinflation. We also have a concern that, that's already affecting us. Our fuel prices, that's already affecting us. And it's going to continue to affect us, not just the fuel prices, but everything fuel related or petroleum related too. So we're going to, see foodstuffs, the trays that we're going to use to serve lunches on. There's going to be increases in prices there. Another word, and two more things that we're all hearing kind of in the news is there's a possible inflation right around the corner.
And recession.
That's, huh?
Recession.
Recession. Is that what he said? Or no?
You said inflation.
Inflation. Sorry. Recession. Recession is right around the corner, possibly. I'm thinking, my own opinion, my gut says it's going to happen later this year. That's my fear. But then the other thing is stagflation. And that's a term I'm sure you start to hear about, which is basically inflation coupled with stagnant economic growth. So that's a concern, not necessarily of what's going to have an immediate impact, but for possible future funding for the school district. I don't think we're going to see a mid-year, it's called a rescission of funds being taken. in January, February, but I'm thinking possibly it might affect funding for the 2023-24 school year. So, preparation for that. That's it for me.
Cool. Any questions for Ron?
No, but I just wanted to say thank you, Ron, for always kind of staying ahead of the game there. I know you have a very difficult job, and especially going into this year, you know, you've always been ahead of the game. So I just wanted to say I appreciate it. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Heather. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Ron. All right. Safety update. We're ready to hear Mike again. Well, for the first time for this group.
Douglas was asking if this goes up. Just want to project this part of the presentation.
Yes.
I don't know if you owe it to
it. Should be known as another user.
Yeah.
Do you have much interaction?
Yeah, go ahead and start.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No rush, thank you. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, as always. It's always a joy to talk about safety, security-related incidents, or incidents, but updates as they come. So this will be the safety and security update, obviously, for June 13th. And, you know, I thought I'd start it off with kind of a summary and summation of what the safety and security department here, safety department, really does. And really, you know, it's a multifaceted and complex system here as far as K-12 school safety goes. You know, we really use a holistic and layered approach here in the school district, and what that means is we focus on, you know, multiple layers, the ability to deter, detect, delay, deny, and respond to an incident if it happens. Through that, we focus on five key mission areas of FEMA, which kind of drives the incident command system and national incident management system, and that's the ability to prevent, or prevention, protection, mitigation, response, and recovery. Each one of those is tied directly towards, you know, each goal that we have here and drives our overall vision and mission for the school district as a whole. Going into next school year from 2022 to 2023, there's a few updates that will kind of take place. Some of this stuff has already been completed as we move into the next school year. The first one I'll touch base on is the SVPP grant, or School Violence Prevention Program grant, through the COPS office, which is the federal DOJ department. We'll touch on tabletop drills that we kind of conduct with each individual school. The updated standard response protocol moving into next school year, which adopted the new 2021 variant. A quick touch on the standard reunification method, Raptor visitor management system, our first responder door numbering system with our new mapping system, Knox boxes for our first responding partners, security signs, and emergency go bags for each one of our schools. The first area that I'll talk about, and this really came from 2019 when the board approved the additional funds to match a contribution from the COPS office for a $300,000 school safety grant. Out of that, it was a 25% match. So we put up $75,000 as a school district in return. The COPS office gave $225,000 to match our overall goal for our project completions. There's two key areas that we'll focus on throughout the duration of that grant. It's going to be video surveillance update and overhaul, as well as access control update and overhaul. Through that, we will convert all of our analog camera systems at our schools to complete PoE Cat6 cabling, which will provide IP protocol for all of our schools. We'll move to a single unified system, which in return will integrate with our access control system to be able to provide up-to-date information. If there's any access control issues, I'll be able to monitor who's entering and exiting the school at any given time, as well as take advantage of analytics and capabilities that are, you know, given to us through updated IP cameras. We'll also be overhauling the access control system, and that's a big one. You know, when I started here, my focus areas were on access control and communications, the ability to deter, detect, delay, but also respond to an incident if it happens. Our access control system that we'll be moving to, will, like I said, will integrate completely with the video management system, but it also provides the means for us to remotely lock any door, remotely unlock any door, and control it from a district standpoint. And also, if an emergency occurs or a lockdown event occurs, it automatically engages the locking systems on those doors to prevent ingress from an outside incident. We'll also be moving, we'll be rekeying each one of our schools, moving to a high security keyway, which increases the overall security of our school and restricts key handling to specific authorized personnel in the district only. One thing we adopted last school year, and we actually completed our last tabletop drill second semester with each individual school, as I mentioned, was tabletop drills. And what this is it gives, you know, me the ability to work with individual schools and build out safety teams. And the safety teams are key individuals that kind of fulfill a leadership role and respond to an incident if anything happens. We identify key roles through the incident command system, whether someone's in charge of logistics, operations, finances, you know, the incident commander, emergency reunification coordinator, emergency response coordinator, and we identify what their initial roles are. And with that, we also do team-oriented exercises, and we work with our school staff on those safety teams throughout the evolution of an event. It could be something as simple as somebody in the parking lot that looks suspicious, or somebody who comes to the school and is upset, or it could be a more complex event, such as a hoax bomb threat, or if the school receives information that somebody can be coming to their location to cause harm. We also went over SRP familiarization for the new standard response protocol. And when we worked through the scenarios, the teams would work on what protocol they would implement. Would it be a secure, a lockdown, evacuate, or a shelter? And we'd go throughout the duration of those incidents to see how it kind of worked and how they really formulated their plan as a team. The end goal, I mean, the end goal is to grow from where we are, conducting after actions, what went right, what went wrong, and what can we improve on as we move forward. The next slide is the new variant of the standard response protocol. And this was adopted in 2021 by the I Love You Guys Foundation. John Michael Keyes is their executive director. We have actually had the standard response protocol in place here for almost over a decade now. The 2021 variant of it adopts a new protocol called HOLD. And what HOLD is it basically restricts movement in the hallways. If there's an incident, it could be a medical emergency, it could be an altercation, or it could just be the inability to control students during a secure, we just need to move them to their classroom so we can restrict movement further. During a hold, you know, students go to the classrooms and they basically continue on with their class day as normal without any interruption to the educational environment. The next terminology, or the next protocol, is secure. And for everybody who's kind of been here for a long time, you're well aware of lockout. There was a lot of confusion over the years of lockout, lockdown. Which do we go to? Is there somebody in the building, outside of the building? And this caused a lot of frustration and heartburn for not only first responders, but school staff members as well. The moment you implement a lockdown, obviously we know there's protocols in place that can create a lot of secondary issues and trauma, maybe to students who are impacted by such events. And it was really just a lockout due to a coyote or something on the playground that caused that. Lockdown will stay the exact same, locks, lights, out of sight. We also have evacuate and shelter. And part of this process and this migration over to the new standard response protocol will kind of be a multifaceted approach. We'll conduct an all-staff training at each school to ensure that all staff members are kind of familiarized with the new protocols and they can ask key questions. You know, what do you do if you're in a lockdown event and the fire alarm was to go off? Do you evacuate your room? Do you stay locked down? Who can initiate a lockdown? All staff members. We want to make sure that everybody is aware that they have the ability to, they're empowered to initiate that lockdown. What do you do if you're in a classroom and you need to evacuate? Self-evacuation. If you're in a gym, if you're outside, a library, cafeteria, locking down may not be the best option, so be situationally aware of what's around you and implement self-evacuation to get out of the building safely. Also with this, we will start, we have a SRP video which was created by the I Love You Guys Foundation. And this will be shown to students before we do lockdown drills. And it really just familiarizes students. It's geared towards the secondary students, middle school and high school. And it goes over each protocol, but more importantly, it goes in depth about kind of what I mentioned. What do you do if your lockdown, if this occurs, such as a fire drill? So it really is to implement or to answer a lot of those key questions, but more importantly, get the direct dialogue from students and their teachers so they can answer key questions that students may have. We also have the new standard reunification method. And we're working on this process right now. Part of this, we have a reunification operation kit, kind of a tongue twister on that one. And what this is it's just pre-staged items in the event that we have to reunify it to an off-site location. I have all the equipment and gear necessary to really help our staff and enhance their ability and minimize and mitigate any chaos that could really ensue to create more of a streamlined process. We have everything from badges, bullhorns, ID cards, and lanyards to identify who's first responders, who's law enforcement, who's fire, who's key staff personnel. We have perforated cards for parents, so that way we know who's kind of reunifying with who. It's perforated. We can give one version to the parent, and the staff will maintain it, so that way we can reunify the correct students with them. Next slide down is our Raptor Visitor Management System. And the Raptor Visitor Management System is an electronic visitor management process, and it really replaces the old pen and paper system that we've had over the years. It allows us to keep up-to-date track on who's in the building, where they're going inside the building. It allows us to access it anywhere we have a web-based interface or access URL. We can access it from our phone if there's an emergency and it requires an evacuation. It allows us here at the district side to be able to provide up-to-date information to first responders inside or who are responding there as to who's a visitor in the building, where are they at, if it's a lockdown, if we evacuate, how many people do we have to account for on top of that. It reads the 2D barcode on the back of driver's license. It basically captures the information, saves a photo, but it does not store any personally identifiable information from there. But what it does is it's an instant screening, and it runs people against the National Sex Offender Registry to verify who's in our buildings, are they permitted in there, what their overall intent is. It provides immediate alert notifications to our first responding partners, as well as school site personnel and district administration and district personnel if anything were to occur. Lastly, it creates unique visitor badges. And these visitor badges are unique to the individual. It includes their photo, their name, the location they're going, and the specific school they're at, with a timestamp and date on it as well. Next slide is our electronic maps and door numbering system. So with this one, we were lucky enough, thank you to the Board of Education for providing funds to update our current mapping system for all of our schools. So this new mapping system we have is all electronic. It's CADron, it's vector filed, allows us to expand it, contract it, blow it up as big as we need it, blueprint files which were provided to our first responders. But on this, it identifies critical areas within the schools, everything from door swing locations, which is important if somebody responds to the school, which way does the door swing, how do we access that room, that building. But it also identifies corridor numbers, door numbers, room numbers. There's no names tied to it, because we all know in schools, rooms move, names shift, everybody moves around, so it's just a room number, so we don't have to worry about if a staff member swaps room, we don't have to reinvent the wheel and create new maps. These maps are shared with all local first responders, so that's everybody from Elbert County Sheriff, Elizabeth Police Department, Elizabeth Fire Department, and also Douglas County Sheriff's Office. So all of them have the ability to access it on their CAD and MDT system inside of their fire trucks, police cars, and Douglas County has access to it if they ever have to respond over here for a joint multi-jurisdictional response effort. And going into next school year, parents, students, staff members will begin to see door numbers above each door on the outside of the school. That number just corresponds to which door it is that provides ingress or access to the school and helps expedite the overall emergency response process for first responders, whether it be fire, EMS, or law enforcement. Next slide. So these are law enforcement Knox boxes. Everybody is kind of aware fire code drives Knox boxes for fire purposes. If you go to a business, whether it be Walmart, you know, a local gym, any business really, they have a black box outside with a red identifier on it, which means that it's for fire personnel. These boxes allow for rapid access and entry for law enforcement in the event of an emergency. If they need to get into the school and need access to rooms, if it's a lockdown event, or maybe it's an evacuation and they need to get into the building to help clear rooms out. It ensures that they have the essential items and keys necessary to get to the classrooms where our students and staff are to expedite their overall response. And there's a key accountability for that. So Elbert County Sheriff, Elizabeth Police Department, and even our fire department personnel all have keys accounted for them for these boxes. So they have 24/7 access around the clock for after school events, even if they have to respond to a burglar alarm. You name it, they have access around the clock. as I mentioned earlier, you know, we really look at a holistic all hazards approach. Detection and deterrence is a key layer of that. So how do you deter unwanted, unlawful, nefarious acts? And something as simple as a basic sign that identifies, hey, you're being video recorded, 24/7 video recordings occurs here. If it's enough to deter 1% of criminal activity, it's a win-win across the board. So these signs are identified on all district grounds, everywhere from the administration buildings to our technology, transportation. All of our schools have them. And they also have our brand new visitor management signs that are outside above the front entrances where the video intercom door station is. This coincides directly with the Raptor VMS system. It's just asking when personnel get to the school, please have an ID ready, because it's going to be ran through our Raptor visitor management system when you come into the school to account for who's in the building and where they're going exactly. A key layer, obviously, you know, of the emergency management process is to be able to recover from an incident, and how prepared are you if something were to happen. So through this overall process, each school is given a emergency go bag. Inside the emergency go bag is all the fundamental items they need to continue to operate while they go from point A at the school to an evacuation or staging area, or even a reunification site somewhere off location, almost off base from military site, you know, off site from their school. And with that, like I said, it's essential items. We have vests, we have maps, we have accountability logs, first aid kits, the most important comprehensive first aid kit, everything from nitrile gloves in it, as I mentioned, bullhorns, batteries, duct tape, everything that we would need to be able to get from point A to point B. The bag on the right is our classroom go bags, and inside of that it will be given to each elementary classroom right now, and we'll expand the program out as we go forward. But inside that will be a small first aid kit, which is just enough for teacher to, you know, provide bandages, ointment, you name it. Alcohol swabs are in there if there was a small, you know, scrape, cut, just in time to get to the larger emergency go bag. But also there's the traffic vest to identify staff members, as well as our red card, green cards, which coincide directly with the standard response protocol, classroom accountability rosters, and a building map that helps them orient where they are inside the school, and also evacuation routes to get out of the building. In each one of our elementary schools, every classroom will have it. As I mentioned, we'll kind of roll the program out, phase it out, see how it works, and continue to expand it to middle and high school from there. So that concludes the presentation. Any questions?
It's a lot. Got a lot going on. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I just have to thank you.
Yeah.
From, you know, first week, every month, I mean, you've been accomplishing so much. And in addition to all of this, early on, Mike and I happened to be at Running Creek together, and the school had started, and there was a young student, probably preschool or kindergarten, who was on the floor, would not get up, would not move. There were probably three adults trying to get him to class. He was not happy. And Mike comes over, talks to the student, gets him to his classroom door, and didn't want to go in, and then asked Mike, will you come in with me? And Mike took him in. So, you know, all this stuff and a personal, you know, relationship with our staff, with our students, if necessary, with our parents. And that's something that you won't necessarily see in a presentation like this, but it's an essential part of the work that our director of safety does, and partnering with, for example, our behavior specialists to deal with student behavior issues. So there's, and then partnering with Marty, who left, but also Jason, on communications, weather, emergency notifications, and all of that. So this was, you know, this was a serious kind of overview, but there's also other parts, and he's just been an incredible addition to our team, and we're really grateful for everything that you've been doing and where you're taking us.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Any other questions? All right. Thank you
very much.
All right. Take care. All right, Douglas, you are up.
So the only thing that I have for my report is the enrollment and population growth report, which you've all received. The report is 66 pages, and some of it. You know, it's somewhat very dense. So we're not going to go through it page by page or whatever. I wanted to give you a few of the highlights. And then one is that this is an update to the facilities master plan that the district did 2017 prior to the 2018 successful mill levy override. And part of the reason that the district did it was a more comprehensive that included enrollment projections but also facilities assessments in terms of different levels of needs throughout the district. And what one of the conclusions from that work was that the highest priority was really operational, teacher salaries, safety, technology, and that the facilities issues were being managed and for the foreseeable future could be managed. One of the things they said then, and that this report says, is really these numbers should be reviewed, excuse me, they say once a year, but periodically. So it's meant as a planning guide. And back when they did it, they did not project the growth that they did in this report because there wasn't evidence for it. Their approach, and both in 2017 and this time, we really had to work with them. They have their national firm, Cooperative Strategies, and they use what's called a cohort survival methodology, and it's based on census data and live births, and because that works. Tell us about the development Gold Creek. Tell us about Independence. Tell us about Spring Valley. I mean, really, our community is freaking out with growth, and it's not in your methodology. So what they did was they kind of added on information about growth. And at that time, most everything was in the planning stages. Nothing had even really broken ground, but everybody had a very high confidence level. These are projects that were going to go forward. And what they said is, you know, you can't be sure that they're going to go forward. And then on top of that, just because you have new housing growth in the community doesn't mean that that's all going to be new families to the community. You get movements within the school district, and you can't really calculate that. But what that expanding of their enrollment projection and population growth projections did was it kind of oriented towards what they called, they came up with kind of four growth lines. And it oriented around one of them more by adding in the development data rather than the high growth or even the decline. So this report then and now doesn't include the charter school. Just easier to manage, in part because the board was paying for it, in part because this is really looking at the district dynamics. The charter school doesn't have a large growth plan for various reasons. So in our conversations, they've said, you know, they're not looking to expand. They did build out their middle school, but it was to increase their capabilities without necessarily dramatically increasing their overall size. This methodology is based not only on this live birth what they call the cohort survival methodology, but also a couple of other factors. And there's a lot of information in this report on these other factors. So the historical enrollment by school, by grade, and by year. You know, just that right there will overwhelm you. You can dig into the data. Resident live birth data, home-based education data, choice in and choice out. So how many students that live here that go to another district, how many students from another district come here. Census data, and then building permits and housing data. And that's really just to highlight the information here. So this is a map that shows by color projected increases in the student age population, which is an interesting one because it shows that the area up by Singing Hills is projected to have the greatest percentage growth. So that has implications for the future of the district because we have three of our four schools down here. So what's going to happen as that growth occurs up north. But it also shows here, this is the next highest growth, which is right to the west of town. And with the developments that are going in now and projected, you see why that's there. But even up here, further north. So this is meant to help with medium and long-range planning. And there's there's just a lot of information. It's really, I would say, almost overwhelming. So but that's what Ron and I found. And we asked them to structure it a little bit differently. So there's an appendix that has some of the different scenarios in it. We said, you know what, let's just do the recommended protection. That's in the body of it, the first 34 pages. And then the appendix shows different scenarios. So if you really want to focus on it, you just focus on everything but the appendix. The overall growth that is what they call recommended, it's their recommended line, grows by about 50 students per year for the next 10 years. Their higher is about 75 students per year for the next 10 years. They've got a lower one, which is 25, and then they've got one that actually is shrinking. So it's not their most optimistic in terms of high growth, but their methodology is similar to the methodology that Juan uses in his projections, which is how many students do we have currently in our schools? We have X number, 200 graduating seniors, and then 150 incoming kindergartners. That's a net decrease of 50. So in the past, you would work with that number to say we expect a decrease of 50. His methodology hasn't gotten that much more sophisticated than moving kids forward, understanding that there are students who join the district and leave. We've learned through the School of Hard Knocks, you know, principal will say, wow, we've had, you know, 75 new students. You know, we need to hire new teachers. This is, you haven't exited the students that are leaving from that number. You're just taking one side of the equation. So the thing that's really going to be important for the board and district leadership is devising the methodology for growth of how the finances are managed, how human resources are managed. So in the past, we might hire a paraprofessional, and then we might have fewer special ed students at the end of the school year than we had at the beginning. And so we've hired somebody, the students that they were serving are no longer with us, and yet we still have the expense. So we would often err on the side of not overstaffing, because we expected this decline that really happened for about a decade based on the live birth data and the basic demographics. Now, with growth, it requires a different mindset that's how do you plan for growth? And how do you anticipate the budget impact to expected growth? So I'll just give you a quick little example. Right now, first grade at Singing Hills has 74 students enrolled, and that's a clean number. They've gotten rid of like students that they know aren't going to be here. That's a good number. So and there's three teachers. That's 25 students per classroom in fifth grade. That's really above what is best
for first grade.
Yeah. What did I say?
Fifth.
Sorry. First grade. So they were saying, you know, we really think we should add a teacher. So in this environment where we're expecting growth, we don't know whether that growth is going to happen at the elementary level or at Singing Hills. We don't know. But we just know that already 25 per class is really above what we know to be best for a first grade classroom. Literacy is super important. Smaller class sizes at the elementary level at the early years are really important. So Ron's going to have to add to the budget, adding an FTE for Singing Hills. But in the past, we might have said, let's hold off, because we're not sure. I mean, the trend had been down. So with this trend, it's really, the good news is growth, because that means there's more resources. And, you know, the other things that come with growth. But it's a different methodology to budget and staff and plan that I think that, you know, principals, Ken, Ron, everybody is doing a good job with. But I just wanted to make it clear that we got really good at, in a sense, shrinking our budget and staying core to our values. And now we have to develop a different approach. I don't know that there's just so much information in here. You know, Beth, did you get a chance?
I read it all.
You read it all. There's a lot in here, isn't there? I mean, if you're into data, boy, there's a lot. What I would kind of caution is that there can be a tendency to say, kind of, what's driving growth, and somehow, you know, it's Jason and all of his good communications is driving growth, or that what was driving decline. But that all those kind of subjective factors are not what they used in 2018 or now. It's really more analytical, and to not forget that. So that's all I had on this. This was completed in mid-February, and it was part of the background of this year's budget preparation. And we just wanted to formally share. Any questions? Any comments? Kim, Heather, everybody good?
They turned off their cameras. Good. All right. Good. Terrific. All right. Thank you very much. That's got to be...
I stayed in my time.
It's got to be a record. So, all right. We're moving on to public comment. And we do have Lori Coring. Did I say that right? Okay, good. And before you get up to talk to us, I have something I need to read to you, okay? During the Board of Education session, time will be provided on the agenda for public participation for members of the community to speak to the board on items of interest or concern that do not appear elsewhere on the agenda. It is the Board of Education's practice not to hear in public session complaints against district personnel. In addition, it's a violation of federal law to discuss in public or elsewhere individual student issues, Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA. In an effort to avoid undue repetition and keep within the time frame of the agenda, the board asks that speakers who have come to express similar opinions on a particular topic designate a spokesperson for the group. Questions or comments requiring feedback will be referred to the superintendent for consideration and later response. Each person addressing the board will have 3 minutes to present his or her views. We will ask you to wrap up as soon as you get near the end of the allotted 3 minutes. The boundaries are designed to help keep the meeting focused. Okay, so the floor is yours, and if you'd like to step up to the podium, or that would be terrific.
Can I clarify if my experiences have involved individuals within the school district? Is me expressing my, I guess, the experience that I've had going to be accusatory in any way, or is...
Well, we ask that you not in complaints against district personnel for the purposes of the board meeting. There is another process for that to follow up for that. So I would like you not to include complaints about specific people or name names.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'm Lori Coring, and I'm a parent and was an assistant track coach for the Elizabeth High School track team. And just briefly, I have a senior, or had a senior actually, graduated, who had no disciplinary history at the high school. He was just nominated for several awards, the T.J. Schreiner Award, which is based on academic excellence, athletic accomplishments, integrity on and off the court. He received the most severe disciplinary action in the history of the tenure at this high school, consisting of a 3-day suspension and removal of the UCO pledge to attend his graduation. From our experience, we attempted to follow policies and procedures that are available on the board website. We appealed, we begged, we did everything we possibly could to prevent the outcomes that occurred. He was later revoked the privilege of attending the state track meet, which this was going to be a full ride college scholarship for him and not part of the initial disciplinary sanctions that were delivered to us. We had college coaches that were in attendance, and the university that he wanted to attend was there, and they ended up offering to an athlete that was seated lower than my son, but my son is beaten in every track meet except for one this season. I'll say that. This is it's been unsurmountable mental anguish on him and the alleged victim who was involved in this situation, who was never spoken to. But a lot of this could have been avoided had policies, procedures been followed by the school's administration. And I am I'm trying to follow the policies and procedures currently, but I'm really struggling when I'm dealing with an administration that doesn't have to follow or doesn't seem to be following them, from our experience. And I guess I wanted to know what a parent like myself should do, or what should I expect in terms of responses to things such as appeals, or if there's inaccurate facts that are I'm trying to be cognizant of the thing that you just read, but I feel that I'm just sort of dealing with some behaviors that are not professional. They are without ethical infusion.
Okay. Can you wrap up for us real quick? We're not in a situation where we can provide an answer. That we will take your feedback and comments into consideration. So we
Is
thank you.
Is there a district resource that can be like an advocate or somebody that might be able to?
Well, that we could talk about that after the board meeting, about the process, but you know, for the purposes of the board meeting, we have to wrap this up, and we appreciate your comments and feedback.
Okay. One more question. To your knowledge, is there a policy for the Colorado Open Records Act as it relates to bus videos within the district?
I am not prepared to, as the board president, I'm not prepared to answer that question. So I you know, that would be another follow-up question.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your comments. Okay. All right. Okay. So we're moving on to the consent agenda. And are there any items in the consent agenda that you would like, any of the board members would like pulled from the consent agenda? And if there are not...
Hold on one second. The consent agenda... You're asking about questions, Carrie?
Yeah, or any of these items on the consent agenda, because we have so many. Is there any that you'd like pulled to be placed into the action item category? Or these are most of these are the ones that that Kristen sent the email about and explained that they were just a couple of minor adjustments.
Let me just clarify.
Yeah.
Can I clarify, Heather?
Yeah.
It's not a practice that the board president has recently used, but it's a common practice just to confirm that the consent is all together and no discussion. So if there's something that a board member wants discussed, then it would be pulled from consent, moved to action. The best practice is that you communicate that in advance of the meeting so that there's an awareness of a discussion. So it's a new practice to just ask to confirm, is there anything that anybody wants pulled? And the reason to pull it would be so that you could discuss it because the consent isn't for discussion. They're just the routine.
Right.
And when there's a lot of things, you don't have to do first, second voting, et cetera, for 10, 20 things. Does that
okay.
help?
Yep, that does help. And I did ask beforehand. So I would like the now I'm looking for it. It has to do with the graduation requirements. Sorry, I'm not seeing it on here.
Not under consent.
That's in action items.
That isn't already an action item.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was getting clarification on. Sorry. I figured it fell under 10.6. Is that not?
No, it's in action items 11.4.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, that's what I was trying to pull up. Sorry, I'm trying to pull up on my phone while being on my computer at the same time. Okay.
All right.
Then I'll wait till then.
Okay. All right. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda items 10.1 through 10.7?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Moving on to action items, 11.1. Can I get a motion to approve the consolidated grant application?
So moved. Sorry. You can take it. I'll take second.
Right on. Okay. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. 11.2, can I get a motion to approve the Legacy Academy Food Services MOU?
So moved.
So moved. Second.
All right. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Yes.
Okay. All right, 11.3, can I get a motion for the first reading of revised policy JCDB, administration of medical marijuana to qualified students?
So moved.
Second.
All right, thank you. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Kircher.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right. 11.4, can I get a motion for the third and final reading of revised policy IKF 2022 graduation requirements, graduating class of 2022 and beyond?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead, Heather.
Oh, am I? Go ahead. Okay,
you betcha.
Thank you. I just had asked, what is this coming down from the state of Colorado to up the SAT requirement?
Yes. Yes. We did find that out in the between the time you and I talked earlier. It is a state.
Okay, so
from the department, it's from the Department of Education.
Right.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes. Department of Education. So is this mandatory that we accept this?
Yes. So the way that the Colorado Department of Education and the State Board of Education have inserted themselves into Colorado public schools is to establish what some people will call graduation guidelines, other people will call them graduation requirements. But because Colorado is a local control state, they did not use the words requirements. But it's a minimum set of criteria for all Colorado graduates to meet. They have to demonstrate proficiency in math and language arts based on performance on a variety of indicators, and they meaning the Department of Education, but it's really the State Board of Education, set those numbers. So the ASVAB score, the IB, every one of those come from the state, and they indicate, they mean the State Board of Education, that districts can have additional requirements. So when the Elizabeth School Board discussed these when they first implemented them, there was a pretty interesting and robust conversation about whether the district included community service as one of the graduation requirements, because it's a value that was held in the community that we wanted reflected in our schools. The decision then was made not to, because we couldn't guarantee that every student would have an opportunity to do community service, but that there was kind of an implicit value for, like, for example, Elizabeth High School has their Big Help Day every year. So they decided not to include that. But the point is that school districts can have higher or additional standards. But we are required to report to the state how every student has met those two measures. And it can be through a capstone. It can be through ACT work keys. There's a number of ways. And these rules are just going into effect now. They were put on pause because of COVID. They were supposed to go into place a year ago.
So there is no way to deny this?
Correct.
Okay.
It's the minimum that the state expects. The narrative around this is they want a diploma that means something.
Right.
And it's... so they set that.
Okay.
So what we can do, for example...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so one of the practices that all school districts, you know, are in the process of developing is identifying students, especially, say, by their junior year, who's struggling to meet that requirement, and then how do we support them? And there's different ways to support them. It could be additional preparation for taking the test. It could be allowing them to take a different test. And, for example, ACT Work Keys is a little bit more oriented towards kind of, I just call it the workplace. It's less a college prep test. It's more about, can you be effective in the workplace? And so the framework for the test is different, and some students respond to it better. And so it's our job to find the appropriate ways to support students to pass one of the measures. The school board previously decided not to pick one of the measures, but to accept all of them, to not limit the avenues that a student could take to demonstrate proficiency in math and language arts, and also for students that would transfer from a different school district, say they had passed it. Some students pass it as a sophomore. They transfer here as a junior. That we would accept anything that the state accepts.
Okay. Well, thank you for that clarification. I just think it's ironic that the state is requiring this, and yet they push kids through during the pandemic. Not our school, thank God, but. It just kills me. I know that has nothing to do with us, but it just kills me that we're asking for more students to pass at a higher level, and yet they're passing students through to the next grade. But thank you for that clarification. I really appreciate it, Douglas. Thank you.
Yeah. So next school year, maybe in the fall, when you're talking with Brett in his school report, it could be something that you guys bring up and say, how are we doing with students that are on track? Or not on track for meeting that requirement? What kind of support are we giving them? Whether there are different avenues, just to be informed about how that's going.
Absolutely.
I think that it's a change, and it is a shrinking of local control that has existed in Colorado for a very long time.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any additional discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right. There are no discussion items on the list. So our next meeting is June 27th, and will everyone be present for that one, or... I can't hear you.
I'll be there.
You're mute.
I'll be there. Sorry. It's at 6 o'clock normal time?
Yes.
Okay. I believe so. We decided to extend our trip one more day. I should be able to meet.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
And that meeting.
Have to call in.
Yeah.
That meeting, with the current plan, is likely to start with an executive session for safety.
Okay.
Again, to speak with the sheriff and the police chief on safety matters, detailed safety and security matters. So just from the public's perspective, including...
I'm curious.
What? We're just trying to get the new board up to speed on all the safety measures that are in place and the agencies and partners and all of that. It's a matter of sharing detailed and specific safety and security information that really isn't... it's so detailed that it could actually impede safety if it were... made available to the general public. So,
all right.
But with just so for your schedule, did not show up.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Look at the agenda to see how long it's anticipated to be. My guess would be maybe an hour.
Yeah. Okay. All right. With that, I adjourn this meeting. It is now 8:58 p.m. Meeting adjourned.